Welcome to Making America Strong Again, the only program dedicated to inspire you and to inspire a nation with stories of American exceptionalism and national restoration. Join fellow patriots as we rediscover our past, reignite our future, and celebrate America now.
Welcome to Making America Strong Again. This is Steve Olds, and I'm pleased to be with you today, and I'm joined in the studio by Don Meeks. Don, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Steve. Glad to be here.
Don is a founder of an entrepreneurial venture that we're going to talk about today, and before we dig into Don's company and his experience as an entrepreneur, we're going to refresh our liberty principles. We had talked over the preceding episodes about each of the founding liberty principles, and today we're on liberty principle number four. And it's this: we believe entrepreneurship is the primary economic means to inspire men and women to pursue their dreams and achieve prosperity. So let's talk about what is entrepreneurship. What does it mean to be an entrepreneur? If you go to the dictionary, entrepreneur is a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business activity, usually with considerable initiative and risk. Does that sound about right, Don?
Didn't realize that when I started, but yeah, it's proven to be true.
It's funny how when we look back, a lot of the things that we expected about running a company are a little different in the rearview mirror, aren't they?
That's for sure.
So, Don, give us a little bit of background. When did you join the entrepreneurial world, and how did you get there?
Probably didn't recognize it at the time, but started early days with probably typical young man activities, mowing lawns, actually started delivering newspapers, little things, and then began working for someone else after my high school years. Graduated high school, started an automotive repair shop with a partner in 1977, branched out on my own. This will be our 35th year of business in September of 1980 as Don's Import Auto Service.
Wow. So you started out, as Michael Gerber talks about in the book, The E-Myth, you were a technician. You were working with your hands. You were turning wrenches. Is that right, working in the automotive business? Or did you start out on the business side of doing that kind of work?
Actually, my introduction to it was by invitation of my next-door neighbor, who was a parts manager at a local dealership here. It's a Volkswagen dealership. Began working in the parts department with him. Apparently proved my value, and the service manager asked me to help come over and start writing service. So I helped write service with him. At that point, because of a general manager that I felt didn't value what I was doing, I decided to pursue another career because out of high school, still searching for my own identity and what I wanted to do in life. Left there, went back and tried two or three other ventures, then returned there as a technician. So mine's kind of an unusual start. Started as a tech, actually in parts and service, went in as a technician, and then a year or so into it, met a fellow that he and I both shared the same dream of having our own business and started out as a partnership.
So Don, let me go back and touch on a couple things, because I think there are a lot of folks that have ideas of pursuing their own companies, but we're faced with a number of challenges. Now, you actually learned the sales side of the business because you were dealing with customers. You were figuring out what it takes to make a satisfied customer. You also began to look at the money side because obviously the dollars have to work when you're selling a service contract or you're selling a particular repair. That's got to translate to being able to cover your costs, your parts, your labor, and all the taxes and different elements. And then you learn the technical side of the skill or the trade that it took. There are a lot of people right now, when they look at entrepreneurship, they get the dream that you referenced a minute ago, the excitement, the kind of the seductive nature of what it means to work for yourself and be your own boss. When you look back at it, what are the things that really surprised you about moving into the entrepreneurial world once you said, okay, I've got what I need, I've got a partner, we've got a dream, now we're going forward? What were the biggest surprises of actually launching a company?
I guess really back in those days, launching it seemed to be fairly easy. It was fairly easy to go down and get a occupational license. We had to negotiate a lease with a our landlord that was also the gas station service station. We just rented the bays. So that was a challenge that we needed to face. We also recognized the value of being debt-free. So both my former partner and I worked for 6 to 9 months doing side jobs, banked all the cash. So when we started, we had a small savings account as well as all of our equipment and our own toolboxes and equipment paid for. So looking back, you think of all these little, it's a pretty good principle, but it was in a much simpler fashion. Didn't require quite as much as it does now with permitting and requirements. And I don't know that you could start a business without having a business plan and being able to secure some debt. We were very fortunate. We started with no debt and launched.
You know, you make a good point about a couple of things. First of all, having a plan is crucial. And a lot of folks, including me, when I started my first business, I figured you just go out and start. You start talking, you start selling, collect a few checks, and you also discover pretty quickly that the money you take in is not necessarily the money you keep. There's a big difference. The regulatory nature of things has changed dramatically. A lot of people don't realize, you hear the general term about red tape and regulations, but when you actually study the amount of regulatory impact both in the local, state, and the federal level, there's a crushing wrap around the world of entrepreneurship right now. It's really challenging, and you have to study those rules and you have to know them. Otherwise, you can find yourself in a bit of a square corner. But the thing that most intrigues me about what you guys did was running a debt-free small business. In the work that we've done over the last couple of years, we've asked a lot of young people, if you're going to start a small business, what's the first thing you have to do? And almost to a person, the first thing that most people think you have to do is to go borrow money. So I ask them the question, so what if it was illegal to borrow money to start a company? Then what would you do? Well, you'd have to get creative. You'd have to think about what it is that you're taking to the marketplace. What value do you create? And can you handle delayed gratification, which is something that a lot of people don't really understand. And I wish when I started my first business, somebody would have said, hey, you got to do this without borrowing a nickel. Because then you're forced to actually pay attention to many of the things that you guys did. You must have looked at, what is it really going to cost to operate this business if we're not thinking about borrowing a nickel to keep it alive? How did you guys deal with that?
One of the things that we both had agreed on, he was fortunate he had a wife that was working. I was still living at home. So we had agreed that if need be, for the next startup period, 3 to 6 months, we would take little or no compensation, because we had very strong voices speaking at us, echoing most businesses fail in the first year and will fail to make even a profit in the first year. So we went into it with a very sober mindset. We recognized that. So we had anticipated it, put aside a little personal savings that we could continue to function on, and reintroduced all the gains of profitability back into the business. So for that first year, we continued to reinvest in the business to get a good, solid foundation to continue to move forward on. And of course, then there's the things that entrepreneurship requires, is hard work, sometimes some long hours, staying late that night because you really wanted to take care of your customer, provide the service that would help them to be your advocate to others about the type of service that you're performing or product you're selling, that you'll go the extra mile. And I think that's a lost concept with some people, is customer service, to realize how important it is to value your customers and be willing to do those little extra things that may not in the day have a dollar value, but will be an investment in your future.
You know, it's interesting. A lot of people think that kind of conversation is lip service. And you hear people talk about it, especially in, I've been through countless number of marketing and sales courses, as I'm sure you have over the years, because I know you're a student, you study, and you want to know how to stay on the cutting edge. And I know I've been to courses where the guys are really teaching manipulative type selling. You know, just get your customer to think this way so you can do that, essentially to the customer, not with the customer, for the customer. And it's a complete antithesis of what you describe. It is a real heartfelt position in your mind and in your company. And I know, because I'm a customer, I've been a customer for a long time, because I know that when I take my vehicle to Don's Import, I know full well you're going to tell me the truth. It may not be inexpensive, because the fix is the fix. There's right. dollars. You got to pay for the parts and the labor, and you got to pay the tax bill. But it's the truth. I can handle the truth. What I can't deal with is when somebody's playing a game. And I suspect you've seen there's no game playing in the automotive industry, is there?
No more than there is in life. Tell people there's a dishonesty all around us. And over the last years of reflecting back, recently I've had people come to me and ask some of the same questions that you're asking today. Well, what do you attribute your success to? Obviously, a strong part of that is my foundational beliefs and religious values that God has instilled in me. But that same concept is a concept of treating people fairly, doing it with honesty and integrity, and realizing you have to charge a fair price because, as someone once said, profit is not a dirty word.
That's right.
We have to continue to move forward with a profitability to continue to provide a service. But I recognized a long time ago that you had to do the right thing for the right reason. It will come back to you. And when you try to take the shortcuts and to make the quick buck or do something disreputable, it will come back to haunt you.
It sure will. And it's, you know, one of the things that you said is really important, and that is that you're sowing seed in the future. You are doing something for a customer that may not yield a financial result today, but it is showing that you're willing to invest in them. You're willing to give them the insight and the wisdom that comes from the counseling and mentorship that you'd had as you were developing your experience. When we come back from the break, we're going to drill down into the future. And now, as you look at your company, perhaps from a role of a mentor, and you develop the next number of years and what's ahead of you, we'd like to talk more about that. So we'll be right back.
Making America Strong Again is brought to you by Patriot Mission. To learn more about national restoration, get free resources at www.makingamericastrongagain.com.
Hi, this is Kelly Fisher, a supporter of the Making America Strong Again mission and your local real estate professional here on the Treasure Coast. It has been my honor to serve our wonderful community since 2003, and with over 1,500 home sales over the past 21 years, it's my hope that you will consider the Kelly Fisher team at Treasure Coast Sotheby's International Realty for all your real estate needs. Whether you are buying, selling, investing, or just need some friendly advice, our mission is to serve you with integrity and to negotiate your best deal. We offer concierge real estate services to beautiful homes in every price range. Please visit us at kellysoldmyhome.com, and may we also invite you to view over 100 raving fan client testimonials on Zillow.com and Realtor.com. Please call me at 772-321-6905.
At Surf Pro of Vero Beach, no job is too big and no question is too small. So when fire, water, or mold damage strikes your home or business, call on Surf Pro of Vero Beach at 772-770-0501. That's where you'll find a team of specialists that's faster to any size disaster. So when the things that matter most are on the line, make sure Surf Pro of Vero Beach is too by calling 772-770-0501. That's Surf Pro of Vero Beach, helping make fire, water, and mold damage like it never, ever happened. Franchises are independently owned and operated.
The big Vero Beach Gun Show is back this weekend, the Indian River County Fairgrounds, with huge summer discounts, express 90-minute concealed weapon permit classes, dealers paying top dollar for your unwanted guns. Just bring them to the show. Vero Beach Gun Show this weekend. More info at patriotshows.com. patriotshows.com.
Welcome back to Making America Strong Again, the program dedicated to inspire you and to inspire a nation with stories of American exceptionalism and national restoration. Once again, here's your host, Steve Olds.
Well, I'd like to thank everybody for joining us today, especially those of you that are listening on our iHeartRadio network, as well as our Patriot podcast. We appreciate your time and attention as we drill down into our Liberty principles. And today I'm joined in studio with Don Meeks from Don's Import Autos here in Vero Beach, Florida. Don, we were talking before the break about entrepreneurship and some of the experiences that you had as a budding entrepreneur and beginning your business. Now let's take a little shift. And as you look at your company now, you have a large group of people. You've learned how to lead and build a successful company. What's it like being the entrepreneur that moves from being the technician and the founder of a company and to being one that actually grows and develops people and so forth? What's that like for you?
I would say that's probably been one of my more challenging and daunting task has been to try to articulate and encourage and equip others to carry forward in the way that I have dreamed and planned and lived my workplace. But I've learned the value of it too. Recently been part of a group called C12, it's a Christian business organization, and they talked about, we learned and studied about the culture of a company and how the culture directly affects your people. And I've recognized, looking back, both at my successes and my failures when I allowed culture to become either healthy or unhealthy, and how valuable that is. By that same perspective, it's training that and teaching that to others. We constantly reinforce the principle of, if you have an issue with someone in the workplace, you need to talk to that individual and not to others. We reinforce the value of treating others with respect. It's something that's been lost in our culture. I have young men that come to work me, and I recognize that they are missing father figures. They have learned how to work, but they've not learned how to treat others. So that's been part of the learning to mentor in that manner. And then as I move up scale to my managers, teaching them to value and carry forward principles that I've built the business on, and that of treating with people with integrity, to treat them with the same respect that we treat each other in the workplace, carries forward to our customers as well, and trying to help continue to shape and mold. That's sometimes a daily task, but it doesn't ever seem to get completed.
You know, Don, one of the things that we've talked about in the past is that it's important to invest in our education. I mean, part of the process that we go through as entrepreneurs and small business owners and essentially becoming experts at management, experts at leadership and different subjects within our company. You spend the time to take your crew out to lunch occasionally. You spend the time to take them off-site and get in front of different organizations and hear other experts. Tell us a little bit about that, because that's a bit unique that you invest the time and the money and the effort to help your team grow.
One of the things that I learned during a stage of an unhealthy culture was that we'd failed to work at building relationships. So out of that, I begin a weekly meeting on Fridays. I take my entire staff to lunch, and I pay for it. We go to visit different restaurants in the community because it accomplishes multiple things. One is just a time for us to sit and just be friends. We work hard together, and we have our little conflict points at times during the day, but now we're just friends that have kids and grandkids, and we like to fish, and we like to watch sports, and we talk about that. The other thing is that we would go away to training seminars together where we get challenged and encouraged. Also, at times, reminded of the value of our training and instruction. And we have those times to dialogue that together. So we intentionally will go away, sometimes even closing the business for a day or two, to be able to take advantage of training opportunities. But it's a continual reinvesting into people. And recognizing it's you need to value them as individuals to help your company grow. And there's a statistic, which I could quote it accurately, but that one of the biggest ways to increase productivity is to express appreciation and respect to others. And I found that to be extremely true.
You know, it's interesting, Don. I couldn't agree with you more. The idea that you would actually close your business for lunch, I can hear people already going, I can't close my business. You've got all the reasons why you can't do something. But the upside to doing it has been substantial, hasn't it?
It has. I've actually – it's interesting when we do occasionally need to hire either because of someone leaving or we are increasing staff position to hear my employees tout the benefits of working for us. And that is one of the things that they place great value on. Say, yeah, our boss takes us to lunch every Friday. And the other thing that we've done is we close the week between Christmas and New Year's because that becomes a high-valued time for family, being in town or wanting to go see family. And that also builds that same relational things that there's something we work hard when we're together, but there's also a value that we work hard for. That's to be with our families and to have time off as well.
And that's awesome. It's one of the other things that I know people struggle with right now in the entrepreneurial world is the money to do those certain things. And I'm sure setting time aside is one thing, being able to set aside the capital to do it. One of the things that's come up pretty regularly, one of the guys on our board of advisors, Drew Miles, owns a company called Tax Savings Professionals. And what we found is that when you show the small business community how to save money on their taxes, they can invest in things like taking their group out to lunch. How many guys are in your company?
We have 17 employees now.
So you take 17 people out to lunch every single week. You take a certain percent of those on the road where you have travel expenses, you have hotel, you have not inexpensive conferences. That money's got to come from someplace. And it's important that you do that. So you found a way in your company to make that work. But whether somebody started debt-free or not, there's always a way, if you're creative, to find ways to make that work, isn't there?
There is. And by going to some of these, I've always appreciated the trainers helping us to rephrase it and not saying, look how much it's costing me, rather than I'm making an investment into my future with the increased knowledge of my staff to do the jobs and perform their jobs at a higher level, the opportunity for them to be encouraged to be with others in their industry, and also to be an investment that we are continuing to work together, building relationships that will enhance our ability in the workplace too.
Don, I think there's going to be two types of folks that are going to be interested in learning more about what you do. There's the folks in the local community that are going to want to make sure that they are able to bring their vehicles to you. And then there's also going to be people who are entrepreneurs, maybe in the automotive industry, many who are not in the automotive industry, that want to learn from what you've experienced. What's the easiest way for them to contact you?
Probably the easiest way is either to call my business, which is locally here at area code 772-569-4714, or if they prefer the electronic media, I have. They can just reach me directly at don@donsimport.com.
So donsimport.com is your company's website, and you can learn more about the services that you provide and learn more about your team there as well, can't you?
Correct.
That's great. So in the final analysis, when you look at the future, is the future for entrepreneurs in America bright?
It's more challenging. I think that's one of the things that we have shown in this country is there's a great resilience of an entrepreneur. But I have reflected often, could I start now what I was able to start 35 years ago?
And it's tough now.
It would be extremely tough.
That's why we got to stick together and work together as entrepreneurs focused on making America strong again. Don, thanks for being here today. It's great to have you, and really appreciate your insight.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for having me.
You bet.
Making America Strong Again is brought to you by Patriot Mission. To learn more about national restoration, get free resources at www.makingamericastrongagain.com.